Tom Apple is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. I am about to talk cars, car talk.
Yeah.
You're talking to a guy who knows nothing about cars, as you know, Tom. Nothing at all.
Which is perfectly normal.
Yeah, well, so are there different categories people think they know about cars and really don't? People
yes.
who do know about cars and really do, and people who concede that they are ignorant like myself.
Yes. And the latter is the healthiest.
Well, you've helped me in my search for a new car because you do absolutely know your stuff. And I guess this is the time of year to talk about cars. We're following the auto show, which was just in Chicago. I guess different versions travel all over the country.
Right.
So what would be the trends for 2016, I guess, into 17?
Yeah, I would kind of call this a year of normalcy. And I would suggest that the Chicago show was this great microcosm of what's going on in the industry. We had a few subcompact crossovers. That's a big deal, and that's a growing segment right now.
Explain what that is.
Yeah, the subcompact crossover market literally didn't exist 3-4 years ago, and now we've identified it. It's growing leaps and bounds. And these are crossovers smaller than the ones we're used to.
So smaller. These aren't SUVs.
I wouldn't call them SUVs. I would very specifically call them crossovers. Yeah.
Because what makes them a crossover?
Yeah, an SUV is something that has body-on-frame construction, is ready to go off-road, might be able to do some towing. Crossovers are much more car-like. If we think of crossovers as elevated cars with all-wheel drive capability, that's more what a crossover is. Usually a higher ride height, and that's really the appeal for a lot of people.
And crossovers are big now.
Crossovers are huge. And then subcompact crossovers, a massive segment. That so many vehicles have entered that recently. The Jeep Renegade, the Mazda CX-3, the Fiat 500X, the Chevrolet Trax. Those are all new in the last couple of years, and people are just migrating massively to that segment.
Okay, I want to talk more about trends and all that. So you come back from the car show.
Yeah.
What do you say if I could buy one car right now? What would that be? Or is that an impossible question because that depends on what your needs are?
Yeah, there's so much different stuff going on. You know, if I knew you were going to carry a lot of dogs in the vehicle.
that would be me.
And if I knew you did a lot of moving of stuff and mileage was a priority, I might suggest something like the Honda HR-V, which is one of these subcompact crossovers, or a little bit bigger, the RAV4, Toyota RAV4, fantastic vehicle in that class. The Nissan Rogue, another nice compact crossover.
So you go to the auto show. Was the Chevy area busy? Have they gotten over those legitimate bumps in the road that they probably should have had?
Yeah, Chevy's doing great. Chevy also entered that same subcompact crossover phase.
So it's like this whole big controversy never happened. We have short memories.
Are we talking about the ignition thing now?
Yeah.
Yeah, we do have short memories. And also, I think that what worked for the General Motors brands, Buick, Chevy, GMC, was that it was more of a General Motors problem than those specific brands. And I do think the public has short memories. And I think that the umbrella kind of caught a lot of that bad news.
There was a time a couple of years ago where we all wanted to buy all-American. I think some people still do. How do you do that even, really? I mean, so Chevy is an American company, but as I understand it, much of what's in their cars or anyone's cars might be from, that part's from Japan, that part is from Germany. And German cars have parts that are from America. I mean, is it all very confused now?
It is very hard to do that now.
So how do you buy all-American or you shouldn't even think about it?
If you don't think about the distribution of profit, one of the most American vehicles you can buy right now is a Toyota Camry.
Mm.
It's built here. Most of the supplier base is here.
I wouldn't have thought that.
Yeah,
Toyota?
It's an interesting one. Yeah, and then the domestic brands, many of them are assembled in Mexico. They're assembled in Canada. So, yeah, buying all-American is tough.
Is that just for cost that we have so much that's made elsewhere?
Yeah. Yeah, and what happens, too, is that the suppliers tend to group together because they have similar needs and similar distribution networks. So if one supplier starts doing something in Mexico, other suppliers will probably build near them.
Mm-hmm. And that's why?
Yeah, you see it. And it's also cheaper to build in Mexico, a little bit cheaper in Canada.
I won't ask what happens if we build that wall, how they get the cars in. I don't even want to know about that. All right, so what was the talk of the car show? What was the buzz? I've been to the car show. I wasn't there this year. But when I have gone, even from my perspective, as a total novice, but I go as press, and in the press room there's all buzz about stuff. Now, I don't understand what they're buzzing about.
Yeah.
But what are they buzzing about this year?
This was a tough show to find a specific thing that was the big buzz. One of the interesting things manufacturers are doing right now, because gas is cheap, is trying to play that. But they're trying to play that without over-committing to cheap gas. You don't want to develop a new vehicle right now. That would be ridiculous because prices could go back up. And even though we have short memories, we don't like to pay too much for gas.
Mm-hmm.
So we saw some variations on trucks. Nissan made some news with a brand new Armada, which is their large crossover, really SUV. But that's something they already had. Ram trucks launched the 2500 Power Wagon, which is a big off-road ready truck. But that's just a version of a vehicle they already sell. So that's the kind of thing we're going to see, I think, in the near future. Chevy introduced its Midnight Edition of a bunch of trucks, which is this really cool blackout trim thing. And again, it's calling attention to trucks. People are looking at trucks right now because gas is cheap. But they're not really committing to them. There's no infrastructure or new models there, just a lot of freshenings and new availabilities.
Where are there new models? Or aren't there?
Yeah, it's the subcompact crossovers where all the action is. That's where all the new stuff is coming out. Like Chevy just redesigned its Trax a year after rolling it out. That's how important that segment is right now.
So when you think Chevy or Ford, Cadillac, just throwing random.
Yeah.
There's a perception in a lot of people's minds of what that is, what that brand stands for. Are those perceptions totally marketing and advertising? And in fact, whether it is a Chevy or Toyota or Ford, they all offer a variety and they're all kind of the same in a lot of ways.
Yeah, there's some great points there. I mean, one of the interesting things that's happening is that brands are all moving slowly up market.
What does that mean?
What's happening is you take any vehicle, take a popular price vehicle, a Chevy, a Hyundai, a Kia, a Ford, and one of the things that's happening is that buyers have new expectations of what should be on a car. So the average price we're paying for a car is now rolling onto $35,000, which seems very high, but there's all this equipment we're adding to vehicles. We all pretty much expect a good stereo system. We all pretty much expect leather and an automatic transmission. Additionally, there's side impact protection, numerous airbags, rollover protection, and now there's lane departure and obstacle detection and avoidance. And all these things are just building onto this price. And what's happening is you can build yourself a $40,000 Impala, which makes it harder for Cadillac, another GM division, to stay on top of that. So I think mainstream brands are forcing upscale brands further upstream just because of the pricing. And additionally, it's harder for upscale brands to stay upscale because so much of the equipment that they used to have as exclusive is migrating down. It's a very weird situation. But
interesting.
But luxury cars are getting very expensive.
How about cars in general? Are they costing more than ever before? Or are they holding about more or less the same?
What we're seeing is that base prices aren't going up a lot, but transaction prices are going through the roof.
What does that mean?
Spread. It means that people are putting a lot of stuff on their cars.
Does that speak well of the economy?
I think it does. I think it speaks well of the economy. It also speaks well, maybe not well, of financing. And that's a problem now, and it's going to hurt the industry in the next year or two.
Well, right now, financing, or when I bought a car, which was, as you know, about a year ago, give or take, a little more than that. Actually, it was a little more than that. Time goes by so fast. It was like 0% finance. It was 0% financing. Is it still?
Financing is still very affordable. The problem with financing right now is that the average loan now is 64 months. So people are financing commonly for 6 years and even 7 years. And those people aren't going to be able to re-enter the market for 3, 4, or 5 years, taking them out of the market and removing them from the consumer.
Is that a bad thing in a way for the car business?
It's a bad thing for the car business.
We're holding on to our cars longer.
We have to.
Yeah.
Right, because we owe so much money on them. We're going to be upside down for 4 years on a vehicle.
Yeah, so people are holding on. Are there other reasons why people are holding on to their cars longer? That's pretty much it.
I think that's it. Also, I think cars are just far more reliable than they used to be.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
They just last longer.
Yeah.
You're not going to have any sort of serious problem or maintenance expense in the first 3 or 4 years anyway. So it's very easy to hold on to them for a while.
On the other hand, there's leasing.
Yes.
So this is a question I'm sure you're asked all the time, but add me to the list. So how do you determine in your mind, should I lease or should I buy?
Yeah, that's something you have to do for each particular offer on a piece of paper and just decide if you want to do that. Because leasing is a very strange phenomenon.
It seems the philosophy would be different, though.
Yeah, there are people that will tell you, there are people in finance will tell you never lease a car. But I don't know that that's really.
Why? What's their reasoning?
The downside is that you never own any of the car. You're essentially renting a car for a prescribed period of time. And that's just fine if you're getting a good deal on it. The whole idea that you don't have any dollar value in the car at the end is fine if you haven't overpaid for the car. I don't think that's a problem. But a lot of people don't understand how that works. That said, especially if you're looking at a luxury car, luxury manufacturers don't like to discount. They don't like rebates. They don't like to advertise price discounts. But what they will advertise is cheap lease deals. So if you see some sort of Mercedes for $599 a month, you're like,
you do.
That seems affordable.
Yeah, you do. So so what I've noticed, and you tell me if this is an observation that's right, it's the Mercedes and Lexus of the world, these other higher end cars that are like crazy leasing now. And what they're doing is they're leasing cars that already have used cars that already have 20,000 miles on them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or more.
Yeah, certified pre-owned is a very interesting separate category now. There's something between new and used, and that's certified pre-owned. And these are, yeah, you can now factory lease a used car, which is a very interesting thing.
And are they the higher end? Because this way, you can say, well, I've got a fill-in-the-blank, a Lexus, and your friends don't know you're leasing that Lexus, or that Lexus already had 40,000 miles on it.
Yeah, Lexus is a good example. Lexus has a really strong certified pre-owned program, and that's a factory-backed program with all sorts of warranty coverage and certain guarantees.
Sounds good.
It sounds very good. You usually end up paying $1,000 to $2,000 more for the vehicle total, but it's been inspected.
More than?
Than if you were to buy it used on the open market.
Okay. Is it worth it?
I think usually it is. And if it's a break-even situation, at least you have peace of mind. And I would not discourage people from that. And the luxury makers went first, and Mercedes did it, and Lexus did it. And you see it migrating down. General Motors has it for almost all its brands, and it's pretty strong. And you'll see it everywhere.
Another trend that, of course, I would bring up seems to be Subaru, but others in general also, they're focusing on all family members, including those with four legs.
Yeah.
Now, pets are members of the family, and I'm really talking about dogs more than cats. There are commercials now. In fact, most of the Subaru commercials I've seen, specifically for that brand, but others as well, not only Subaru, in the commercial are dogs. And the focus is it's easy to get the dog into the pickup truck. Or you just see the dogs going to wherever they're going as members of the family. And in the Subaru commercials, well, the dogs are driving the car. I mean, they go really, you know. So is there a focus on now? Several years ago, there began to be a focus on safety, and you'd see all these kids in the commercials. Sometimes the message was talked about. Sometimes it was just implied that, okay, the kids are in the car. It must be a safe vehicle. Is there a message here that it seems to me it is?
I would think so. I don't know how widespread the use of dogs in commercials is right now. I know Volvo is intermittently behind dog safety. And every other or every third overshow, you'll see that they do something with pet safety. But I think it works very well. And like you mentioned, the kids in commercials just sort of suggests that the vehicle is safe for kids. And actually, if it's safe for an adult, it's safe for a kid. There's not a lot of difference. It's a body that has to be protected from impact or rollover. But yeah, I think the implication is there.
Are our cars safer than they ever have been?
Oh, yeah. So much safer.
Are you concerned about rollover in the SUVs? Or is that just been people like you in the media saying, oh, this is a problem when it's really not a problem?
No. The crossover SUV rollover thing was a problem once. We talked about the difference between crossovers and SUVs. And at one period in time, SUVs were really pickup trucks or trucks that just had, you know, extended bodies that fit people. And those had very high centers of gravity and were prone to rolling over if you were to hit, you know, a fast corner or something. It wasn't common, could happen. But now crossovers aren't a lot different than the way they're built in cars, and it's just not a situation. Additionally, there's versions of anti-skid systems that actually work to prevent rollover.
One day, will the car be driving us?
Yeah, unfortunately, it will.
Really?
Yeah, I rue the day. It's a different world.
You think it's
going
to happen?
I think it's going to happen.
Have you driven any of the cars that park themselves?
Oh, yeah.
Do they?
Yeah, self-parking cars are fascinating, and they work very well.
They do?
Yeah, they involve some level of driver engagement, but they tell you what to do.
So it's like the airplanes that land automatically?
Something like that, yeah. And I think that the self-driven car or the autonomous car is a long way off, at least full autonomy. The whole thing where you're in your garage, you enter an address, and it just takes you there is very far off. The government and insurance agencies aren't ready to do this, and there's no legislation that governs this yet. There's no infrastructure support. The government, municipality, state, country, no one has built in anything into the ground or the roads to make this work, and cars don't talk to each other yet. Right now, all this technology—
So one day, my car will be talking to your car?
Yes, that's V2V communication, vehicle-to-vehicle communication, and manufacturers are working on that now. And that's a really important component of making the autonomous vehicle work, because cars have to know where other cars are. But it's
why? Common. Why do they have to know that?
To prepare.
I don't want to know where you are.
It's a perfect thing to do.
Maybe
as you approach
your wife
an intersection.
Wants to know where you are.
Yeah. In terms of privacy, it's gone.
I mean, really, is this going to all happen?
It's going to happen. I think that regular full autonomy is a couple of decades away. But levels of it, I think that your ability to get on a highway and set the super cruise so that you can take your hands off the wheel, that's close.
So, as I've mentioned a couple times, we recently purchased a new car, and it had been years before that, because we drove our car that we had well over 125,000 miles, I don't know. I mean, many years that we had the car. So all this stuff was new.
Yeah.
Like keyless entry. I thought previously that was a baseball bat. You know, I didn't know. You know, all this stuff was new. So you've got all this technology going on. You know, people talk about cell phones being distracting. I'm sure it is. But is all this other stuff going on distracting too, particularly to either people that are novice about all the technology like myself or maybe older drivers?
Yeah, funny you should say that. When Ford first launched, I don't know whether it was 4 or 5 years ago, my Ford Touch, which was one of the early versions of voice command, and it had a series of different controls that you could take place with on a view screen. It was supposed to be the answer to distracted driving. You were supposed to voice control whatever you wanted to do, and you not have to think about it.
But that seems distracting.
But
itself.
The argument was that in itself is distracting. Yeah. And we're arguing with that now. I think the industry is coming to grips with that. And most cars now have voice control, but they don't brand it because they don't want to call too much attention to it.
So is there going to be a stupid car for people like me at some point? So you've got all these smart cars down the road you were talking about. Is there going to be a stupid car for folks like me?
No, I think you're going to find very base versions of vehicles probably won't come with a lot of these systems, but that's about it. The voice commands and all the other autonomous controls. And additionally, the ability for Apple CarPlay, for example, or Android Auto, where your phone becomes what you control the vehicle with, that's happening.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'd love for that to happen, except I have – so maybe you can mediate these fights I have. So I get into the car and I tell – now, I'm a professional broadcaster. And you know who David Fry is, the guy – this is a true story – the guy who broadcasts the Westminster Dog Show.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Every year he's retired now. This was his last Westminster show. He's a good friend of mine. He was in town. And we're both driving out to the suburbs somewhere to see this animal-assisted therapy organization that's quite incredible, operated by Angel on a Leash. And I had just gotten the car, so I was new at it. But I'm telling the address – I don't remember what it was – something hospital. Here's the address. Here's the city and state to my car. And my car says, I do not recognize, over and over and over. I mean, I'm now screaming it as if the car is deaf. And I'm really I'm supposed to be a professional – David Fry, who has the most brilliant voice in the world, says, let me give it a crack. To David Fry, it says, same thing. I don't understand you. Two professional broadcasters. So I call up the manufacturer of the car and I tell them about it. Their response was just like yours. Ha, 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 ha. We can't do anything about that. You know, so at some point, does this technology not always work?
Yeah, it's way better than it was. The earliest Ford
version.
So
I would have been even more frustrated.
Yeah, I think so. They never recognized my voice. They never recognized the requests I had. Now it's better.
Well, they know who you are.
I don't know if they know it's me when I get into
a
car.
We can't. We can't goof up Tom. I mean, this guy might write about us.
But it's better. It's also what's also gotten better are the algorithms that understand what you're trying to say. So there's multiple layers of how the software works, and it's just a little bit better at recognizing stuff. I remember one of the first systems where I tried to enter an address using voice commands, and it was a nightmare. And finally, I got to this really weird situation where it was asking me to break down the address, just the number, just the street, just a north or south. And at that point, I was like, I'll just get a map.
Do they still make those?
I don't know. I needed one.
I don't know.
I needed
one. Then I just jump to my phone and use the GPS on my phone if I need to. But it's really frustrating to have to do that, actually.
Yeah.
But are all the cars, are all the GPS systems essentially the same? Are there certain things that are the same technology no matter what manufacturer you buy from?
There's only two or three suppliers of nav systems and the root systems that drive a lot of the infotainment stuff. There's not a lot of suppliers of that. So you will run into things that feel the same.
What was it that was just in the news where something bad was with, like, 12 or 20 brands of cars or 20 manufacturers.
The Takata airbag situation?
Yes, thank you. Yeah. So is that another example? So you have, it doesn't matter which manufacturer it is, most of them buy from the same supplier.
Yeah, this is absolutely out of control.
And where are we now with that?
More recalls. They're now thinking that as many as 90 million vehicles will be recalled, which is starting to become every vehicle ever built. It's ridiculous. And what's worse is that some of the vehicles that have been recalled and fixed may have to be recalled again because it's not entirely sure what caused the root problem.
But how about, okay, so you said they will have to be recalled, which tells me there are thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of cars out there on the road now that haven't gotten that recall that are driving with defective airbags.
Potentially defective airbags. The problem is very rare, but unfortunately in very rare cases it's fatal. And that's why we have to fix it. That's why this has to be.
And what's happening with the airbags that?
What's happening is the detonator, the housing of the detonator, in very few cases has become corroded. And it doesn't, what it's supposed to do is move out of the way when the explosion that launches the airbag takes place, but instead it shatters. And it's made out of metal. So that metal, instead of moving out of the way, comes apart and will be propelled out with the airbag. And in a couple of cases has resulted in a fatality.
Yeah. Hmm. So how many cars are out there now with that we are going to eventually hear about?
They're talking about 90 million now. Total vehicles.
But if people haven't had it replaced, or I called my manufacturer, I went to this website, right?
Yeah.
And maybe if you don't know it, that's okay. We could add it.
No, it's safercar.gov.
Do
that's
that
the
again.
Official government. Safercar.gov.
S-A-F-E-R?
Uh-huh.
Car.gov.
Yeah, that's the official site.
But if you go there, not all the manufacturers are listed, or it tells you to call the manufacturer, and then I've done that, and the manufacturer says, well, we don't know anything about it. So what do you do?
What you're waiting for is an official recall on that vehicle. So there are vehicles that have Takata airbags that haven't been recalled yet. They don't know if they're going to be recalled because they're a slightly different design.
Sounds like a mess.
It is a huge mess, and it's not going away.
So what do people do who drive a car?
They take solace in the fact that it's exceedingly rare.
Are these
even
cars...
Just because you have an accident with an airbag deployment doesn't mean you're going to have a problem. You're probably not going to have a problem.
So does this problem, at least let's make some people feel better. If you have a car that's 5 years old, 10 years old, what's the magic number where you know this is not occurring for you?
I don't know that.
Is there a magic number? If you have an old car, are you probably okay or not necessarily?
I don't know when the series of airbags began, but it goes back far.
It does.
Yeah, it does. That's why this number is so big.
Wow.
Yeah, but it's a ridiculous problem.
Now, are you safe if you buy a new car? Are at least the manufacturers for 2016 cars and beyond saying, okay, we knew this was a problem, and we've then done something about it?
That's a good question, and I don't know the answer to that. I would assume
that's not good.
No. And I assume that most manufacturers are avoiding using Takata bags and then avoiding the problem entirely. But again, the kind of scary part is that no one's entirely certain what caused the problem.
Hmm.
So originally they had thought it was just airbags in older vehicles in hot, humid places. And I think that statistically that's where the problem seemed to be. But then they saw incidents of it happening in other locations and no one knew what to make of that.
So being a podcast, I rarely promote other podcasts because it's not like radio where you promote the next show after you.
Right.
But I'm about to. So the next one that will hit, which I'm so excited about, they've interviewed me for years. Now I get to interview Steve and Johnny.
Yeah.
They know about cars.
They
or
do.
Here's my quote. Well, hold it. Hold it. We'll find out. We know that you know about cars. This is what you do. Do they really know about cars?
I'm going to go, yeah. Yeah. They were in the test drive program. They drove a lot of vehicles. They know what they like. They know what they don't like. I don't know if they can tell you about the very specifics of stratified direct injection, but...
What did he say? About what?
But most people don't care.
So how did you get into doing all this? Were you a car buff as a kid?
I was a car buff as a kid, and I had a number of car jobs as a younger man. I worked in a garage. I worked in the Kmart auto section. But I ultimately got into market research. But then I started doing market research for vehicles. And one day I just realized that Consumer Guide was located in Lincolnwood. And I'm like, I could drive there. and I shot off a resume, and unbelievably they responded.
So... At one point in time in my life, I had what was what anyone would have called a lemon. But the lemon laws were then just being developed. I was a kid. But it really was. It was a horrible situation. And the people who worked at the dealership knew me. I mean, because I was there all the time with a car that died on the highway. I mean, more than once. I mean, it was just a lemon, you know. Today there are laws to protect people. My question to you is, do we have so few lemons that we virtually never see those laws put into action? Or are they still out
there?
They
could put it into action. And cars, you can still end up with a lemon. I think the lemon law in Illinois still is basically a three strikes you're out. If you bring a vehicle back for the same problem three times and it can't be solved or corrected, the vehicle is supposed to be replaced.
Hmm.
And I believe that law is still intact.
Yeah, I believe the law is not. Yeah. So what's disappointing to hear from you, I thought you were going to say, no, it doesn't happen anymore. The cars are too good. But that's not the case.
No, every now and then you run into some tricky system, and on one particular car, it's just bad.
Is there any – first of all, just answer yes or no.
All right.
Is there any manufacturer that you would never buy from? A maker of a car that you would just say, you know what? I would never take my family in a car made by that manufacturer.
No.
Would you tell me if it were yes? I'm not asking you to name the manufacturer.
I think I would. I was trying to think of any car company that might come to the U.S. that I would be dubious about. And it's interesting that a number of Chinese makers have threatened to come to the U.S. over the years.
Do we care?
The funny thing about Chinese cars is that no Chinese maker, no Chinese brand vehicle is here, but secretly, some Chinese-built cars have arrived on these shores.
And are you concerned about, I mean, with all the recalls of everything else manufactured in China, because their standards are just different than ours, and for whatever other reasons, various reasons, including people who don't tell the truth necessarily there. I don't know how else to say that. Are you concerned about being in a car that would be made in China?
I'm not now. There's only two vehicles right now. Only one of them's on sale, another one arriving shortly. One is the Volvo S60 Inscription, and that is a long wheelbase version.
Made in China?
Made in China.
Hmm.
And it's made in China because it's going to be very low volume here, but long wheelbase, lots of room in the back seat vehicles are very popular in China. So Volvo builds this vehicle in a Volvo factory that happens to be in China. I have ridden in the vehicle. I have driven the vehicle, and it's a Volvo. I have no concerns about it at all. And as a Volvo representative said to me, it's just a Volvo in a Volvo plant, just not in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And Buick will be bringing in a midsize crossover soon called the Envision that will be built in China.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't be concerned about it?
No.
Okay, so that's good to hear. What about the Tesla and what about the plug-in and electric cars? I mean, to me, it seemed appealing, but we don't have in Chicago anyway. Maybe in California it's different. But in Chicago and other places in the country, it's worse than Chicago. There's no infrastructure
right
to plug them in. And in big cities, the thing you plug it into might be just taken by somebody.
Yeah. If you commit to electric and you live in Chicago or the Chicago area, you simply have to work out a route that works for you. You have to have a charger at home. There's no way around that. You can't do it just plugging it into the wall. It takes too long. And it'd be really nice if where you drive to every day, your place of employment, allowed you access to even just plug-in charging just to make that work.
So is that a trend or is that something that was just a fad?
No, I think it's a trend. And I think the car to watch for the next couple of years is the Chevy Bolt with a B, not the Volt with a V, which will be out later this year. They're promising 200 miles of range for about $30,000 after the federal tax rebate. And that's a vehicle to watch because it's affordable. It offers a really useful amount of range. But gas is very cheap now, so we'll see how people respond to that.
Interesting. Where can people learn more about you and read your work?
I'm at consumerguide.com. The fun stuff, if you're not looking for a car, just want to have fun, it's the CG Daily Drive blog.
Right. I've read your blog.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. And if you
so
want
how do people find it?
It's CG Daily Drive. That's it.
Do it again.
CGDailyDrive.com.
Excellent.
And I am Car Guy Tom on Twitter.
You certainly are.
Yes.
You are the car guy of Chicago. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.